Welcome to the Lead and Follow podcast. I'm your host, Sharna Fabiano, author of the book, Lead and Follow. And I'm pleased to bring you the latest research, insights, and educational techniques in the emerging field of followership to help you connect and collaborate better with the people around you, whether you're leading or following. Please do leave us a review in your favorite podcast app, and thanks so much for listening. My guest today is Scott Allen, PhD. He's professor of management at John Carroll University, an author, a podcast host, and the founder of the Collegiate Leadership Competition. He leads workshops across industries and does all kinds of other amazing things. Scott, I'm so thrilled and honored to have you here to share your experience teaching leadership in a way that includes followership. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Sharna. It's so much fun to be on this side of the conversation with you because we've recorded two awesome episodes on my podcast. And so I'm so excited to be on the other side and try that out. This time I follow, right?
Well, you know, let's see what happens, right? Let's see what happens. The roles are fluid. And indeed, I think that's how we met. So it's kind of special to be on the podcast together again.
For sure.
I have so many questions for you, but I want to start by just kind of asking where followership's sitting for you right now in your teaching. You know, you've been teaching leadership a long time, and I imagine it's always evolving. So just give us a sense of kind of where you are with it right now.
You know, Barbara Kellerman said, I had her on a few times now, and she says that she does not talk about leadership without talking about followership and context. That's her leadership system, leader, followers, context. And really, I've kind of used that as a little bit of a North Star for myself as well now, that if I'm going to talk about leadership styles, I'm talking about followership styles. I'm not talking about either one of them. And that's with corporate clients, that's in the classroom, that is really most places that I'm thinking about leadership now. Ron Riggio, when I had him on my podcast, he said, leaders don't do leadership. Leadership is co-created by leaders and followers. And then through my conversations with you and Ira Chalev and Barbara, I mean, it's just, how do you have the conversation? And I said this on an episode not long ago, but it's almost like if you look at Ron's statement, leaders don't do leadership. Leadership is co-created by leaders and followers. There's a word that we need to come up with that isn't leadership or followership. There's something more holistic there that I don't know what that word is, but it's, you know, progress. I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. This has actually been my dream for a while because in social dance, we use the term improvisation to mean lead and follow, but it's not quite right for organizations. So I've too have been searching for this term. And I want to just call out here, Michael Linville and Mark Reneker just published their textbook, Essentials of Followership. And in it, they coined a term like this, purposeship. And in fact, maybe we can throw down a challenge to listeners right now. What is the word that you think is more holistic that can mean both leadership and followership together? Send us your ideas. And by the way, I totally agree. Kellerman's triangle is such an anchor, leadership, followership, context, so useful for understanding what's happening or even what needs to happen in any given situation.
Exactly. And, you know, I was watching recently on Netflix, there's a documentary about kind of the Hitler's inner circle. And that is a fascinating documentary because oftentimes we think of Adolf Hitler as, you know, the leader. But, you know, he was surrounded by some people who unfortunately were effective at what they did, whether it was his minister of propaganda or some of the folks who had experience in the military. And so, you know, yes, back to Barbara, you have this individual. But it wasn't just him that got him into that position. There were several others and contextual factors. So, for instance, the crash of the U.S. stock market, right? Mm-hmm. It really kind of catapulted that party to a place of relevance that it never would have been in. So that contextual shift, not only was Germany struggling at that moment, but it's an interesting look into how it was co-created. Back to back to Ron's statement, that was co-created not simply by one individual, but by a group of individuals. And then the context to Barbara's leadership system, you know, the context, unfortunately, aided them in their elevation in certain ways, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Like the conditions make certain things possible.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm thinking about you with your students or with your corporate clients. There's like a transition to be made mentally, right? From like the leadership model to like a co-created model. I wonder how you introduce that. What are some of your favorite ways to kind of get over that speed bump with folks?
My first discussion with you, maybe we can put a link to that in the show notes, but my first discussion with you really helped me think this through. The followership, so I co-founded an organization called the Collegiate Leadership Competition. And leadership styles and followership styles has always been in that curriculum. So if you take Blanchard, Vroom and Yatton, if you take Goleman's Harvard Business Review article from a few years back, and you kind of, you know, integrate them, you can come up with some leadership styles, an authoritative style or a delegating style or a yell, tell, hard sell, coercive style. So you can come up with about seven leadership styles. And then if you take the work of Kellerman and Chaliff and Kelly and integrate those, you can come up with five or six different followership styles. Depending on the language, it's different in each of their works, but you can come up with some kind of themes of different follower styles. So in that context, whether it's in the classroom or whether it's in the collegiate leadership competition, we are building awareness. We're building awareness that there's two sides of the coin. This is a system at play, and we want you to be aware of that. Sometimes I'll talk about how what the leader puts out, the style the leader puts out, will oftentimes be returned by followers. So if I'm an overly coercive, fear-oriented leader, I might get people who are just good soldiers and not going to speak up, not going to voice their opinions and just do what they're told. So I talk about it as that system.
Scott, I feel like you're about to say something really amazing, but I want to just jump in first and underline something you're saying for listeners, because I think it's really important and practical takeaway, which is this idea of how we reflect back a complementary style, right, to our leader or to our follower for that matter. It's a phenomenon that listeners might want to just start observing right now, you know, in themselves or in others that they work with or that they live with. So what are the many ways in which how a leader communicates influences then how a follower then responds and vice versa? It might be more subtle, but I've definitely had clients come back and tell me that from the followership role even, hey, I changed how I was standing or how I was speaking or how I was thinking about my manager. And our relationship totally shifted for the better. So that's your first piece of homework from this episode. Just kind of notice like what sort of style is affecting you and how others are responding to you in return. Okay, Scott, please go on.
Okay, so I have come across an activity which is so much fun. So there's a gentleman named John Ross. He's at Indiana University. I met him in a conference last summer. He wrote a book called Team Unity, which I absolutely love.
Oh, it's on my list. Yeah, I got to get to that.
Yes. So he came up with this activity. He introduced this activity at a conference with these dice. Okay. Mm-hmm. So essentially how the activity, and I would really encourage listeners to either reach out to me for the directions or just listen intently and start writing these down. So grab a pen. But it's really fascinating because what I'll do is I'll introduce these six styles of leadership. And again, these are just integrated from various sources, but you could have a pace setting style, a coaching style, a democratic style, an affiliative style, different styles. And there's probably seven of them. So I kind of talk through those. I might show a clip from Apollo 13 or from Hidden Figures that nicely models four or five of those different styles in a clip. And people kind of nod and they say, oh, yeah, okay, I get this. Yeah, I see that he's using those different styles. Gene Kranz in Apollo 13, where they're trying to figure out how to get people back. I think the clip on YouTube is New Mission, Apollo 13. If you type that in, you'll get that 2-minute clip. And then I'll introduce the followership styles. And if you watch that clip, you can see people who are kind of fully engaged and all in, but also a little bit opposed and open and really asserting their point. And so all of a sudden now, these participants are watching the same clip, and now they're seeing these followership styles. Mm-hmm. They're kind of blown away. They're thinking, wow, I didn't even see that was there, but you're naming these things. Some people are a little bit checked out and disengaged. Some people are, you can see from their nonverbals, they're kind of opposed and underground. So it's a really interesting clip because there's a lot going on. And I just kind of abruptly shift. I hand out some dice and I say, okay, I'm going to give you a minute. What I want you to do is just go ahead and roll as many sixes as possible in the next minute. Go. And people kind of bewilderedly look at me and then they just kind of start slowly rolling dice. And usually if it's a small enough group, I'll kind of go around the room and we'll add up and average the number of rolls that they got in a minute. And it's like usually around six mm-hmm. sixes they rolled in a minute, or seven maybe. And then what I'll do is we'll kind of average that out. And then I'll just say, I want your average to be 20. You're at six right now. That's not good enough. I want 20. Go. And so they start rolling.
Right.
And, you know, some people are like, why are we doing this? What is this? But they don't say anything usually. Sometimes people kind of just stop participating. Sometimes people intentionally go really slow and they just kind of, they're checked out. So we go through the second round and it's really, really interesting because it goes from about six to, you know, maybe seven on average, or mm-hmm. maybe eight on average. But there's a couple people in the group who've really tried from the very, very beginning, and they're at like 16 rolls in a minute. As soon as I said 20, they tried a little bit harder. And so in between time two and three, I'll say, oh, okay. So for those of you who got above 12, would you go ahead and please stand? So what'd you do? What was it that you did that got you to 14? That's really, really cool. It's awesome. So they kind of coach the other team members through what their style was. And I give them some props and talk them up a little bit. And we get three or four different people who got a higher number, and they start to participate a little bit and show others at their table what they had done to get these high numbers. And other people are kind of impressed at this point. And so I say, okay, I think you all can get to 20. I want an average of 20. And then I just very kind of authoritatively share a vision. I say, look, we're going to go low. We're going to roll the dice really, really, really fast as you can. And you're going to go low to the ground. And if you want, you could build a little barricade like Jim did. Mm. And if you want, you can maybe not have it be on the table. Janet had a piece of paper there, so it didn't roll as far.
Nice.
So everyone kind of gets ready now this time. And all of a sudden I say, okay, 20 is the goal. And then I say, okay, go, let's do it. And so then we're going and they start and I'm walking around the room and I'm using their names and I'm saying, that's awesome. Great work, Pete. That's awesome, Janet. Good job. And they're kind of just building them up a little bit. The average then always after that minute always goes to about 16.
This is fantastic.
After that, I go back. Now you have people who've rolled 27, 28. Wow. You have sometimes someone who's gotten to 30. So these folks, we kind of elevate them. We say, hey, what were you doing? That was awesome. Can we gather around you? Do you show us your technique? So that person kind of coaches the rest of the group. And all of a sudden, and then I say something to the effect of, the highest average score I've ever had was a group of Toyota employees, and they got 22. And then everyone's like, oh, you know, we can be Toyota. And so, so then they roll again. And almost every time, Sharna, they get to, let's say, 18, 19, 20, 21, sometimes they beat the record. And I'm honest with them. Usually they beat the record. And so they've kind of been so enthralled in the activity that they didn't really realize kind of it. Some do, but some mm-hmm. don't, that I was just modeling the styles. And in the first couple rounds, it was kind of a tell go ahead and do this just because I said so. And then I kind of provide a lofty goal, but give them no support for it. And then in the next third, between the second and third round, we start being more democratic with the people telling others what they did, coaching and being a little more affiliative, like, good job. That was wonderful. I love it. And all of a sudden, then some people get to 20 and now they see it's possible. And so then more people get to 20. And also in the room, as I have them debrief, I talk about what were the different followership styles that you even experienced that in that session. Well, I kind of thought you were a little bit of a jerk in the first two rounds and I was kind of checked out and I didn't really want to try for you. But then I felt like we were a team and I felt like it was more of like a goal and I didn't want to let my own people at my table down because everyone else was getting 20. So I went really quick and I was a little more engaged and I was a little more in. And this little activity, I then will just, because you can buy the dice, they're very, very cheap. I will say, please take this back to your office, put it next to your computer, and I want you to remember the dice. So it's a little bit of a touchstone as well, that leadership and followership matter. And what I put out is likely going to come back. And in the context of the leadership competition, what we're really, really trying to do is bring students to a place of intentionality, which is just, how are you showing up as a follower? Are you fully engaged? Are you an individual who is not trying to take over? Or maybe you do need to take over, but at least make that decision intentional, right? And you talk a lot about that. I mean, how are we showing up? And is there intentionality behind how we're behaving?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly what was in my mind as I was listening to this amazing story. I need to go out and get some dice now. One thing I love about it is the obvious complementarity that it reveals, right? So, I mean, not that you can predict, I guess, you know, what I want to add here is it's not a guarantee, right? Like no matter how you present yourself as a leader, it's not guaranteed that someone will respond to you a certain way, but it does have an influence, right? Tremendous influence, and the reverse as well. In fact, I wonder what you think about this. Like I can definitely see how comparing those styles is effective. But sometimes I wonder that we get a little bit lost in the styles, like in terms of how we show up. So, you know, okay, my choices are, you know, adaptive, affiliative, coaching, whatever they are. But what about other things? What if I, you know, need to be in a certain moment a passionate leader or a compassionate leader or a patient one or a calm one or a zen one or whatever the, you know, adjective might be, or follower, right? On the follower side also, like, how do I want to show up? Maybe something like courageous isn't appropriate in a certain moment, but something else is. So to kind of, you know, in the genre of intentionality, is it worthwhile to expand the list of adjectives, so to speak, you know, in terms of how we're showing up with each other and how we want to respond to each other given, you know, given the circumstances?
Oh, I think for sure. I mean, I think there's, when we're in all of this work, at least within the context of the leadership competition or the 2 hours that I have with this group at Organization X, you know, you're kind of introducing the concept of, here are some of them. Are there others? Yes. And are there other ways of being? For sure. Here's some, so that you can start to kind of wrap your head around, and I don't mean that in a condescending way, but kind of grasp the nature of this relationship between these two. And then rarely do we get to a point where we're practicing with some level of intentionality, but I totally think you're correct. I mean, the key for me with leadership or followership is, am I, to use the Kansas Leadership Center's language, am I intervening skillfully? And what does that mean right now? And if we go to dance, one of your areas of expertise, or if we go to construction, there's a right tool or a right move for the situation. Maybe not only one right move, maybe there's a few potentially right moves, but am I at least intentional in my choice of that, not just working from a default? Because Goleman has a nice analogy with the golf clubs, where these different styles are like different clubs, and sometimes they're appropriate depending where you are in the course. Mm-hmm. But a pro golfer doesn't tee off with a putter and putt with a driver. They're intentional about the tool they're choosing, and then they do their best to play it well. And I think the same shows up for followership. I mean, one of the styles we talk about is kind of opposed and open. Mm-hmm. And I've worked with a lot of colleagues who have really great points. They have like really good thoughts, but how they show up is negative, pessimistic, and people tune them out. They shut down, and they don't listen to them. So that intentionality, that's just one of my favorite words.
Yeah, you're so right. Like, you could say the same thing 1,000 different ways and get 1,000 different results. I mean, maybe not 1,000, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The same information can be presented in different ways. It does really matter. Like, our nonverbals also matter so much. You mentioned the Collegiate Leadership Competition, and I love this entity because it, you know, speaks to me as a dancer, right? It really puts the theory into practice.
Yes.
In the sense that you can't learn to swim from a book or dance from a book. I think you also can't entirely learn to lead or follow from just the theory. So I'm wondering if you can just give listeners a little more insight into how the competition really puts students in those situations where they have to embody these roles together in order to succeed.
Great. Sure. So imagine that you have a team of 6 students from colleges right now, just throughout North America. So I think 6 or 7 schools from Canada, to 30 some schools from the United States. And they each put together a team of 6 students, and there's a coach, and there is a curriculum. And every January through April, that coach guides the students through the curriculum. And then in April, there's an opportunity to put what they've learned into action. Now, I'm not all that much of a competitive person in a traditional sense. So, you know, winning the CLC wouldn't necessarily fire me up. But my co-founder, Arthur Schwartz, he said, well, why do people practice? They practice to compete or to perform. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so true. I mean, what you said is beautiful. And when you think about how we do leader development, a lot of the time it's sitting in a room talking about it. That's like me taking a course with you about tango, mm-hmm. and you teaching me the ins and outs and the steps and the theory and all of this stuff. But does that mean I'm a tango dancer at the end of that? No, I've literally sat in a chair. Maybe we did a quick exercise here and there, but I'm not going to be a dancer. No different than I would be a pilot if I sat in a room and learned about flight. I can't go fly a plane. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to create a space, a practice field, so to speak, for leader development. So these teams get together weekly for maybe an hour and a half. Sometimes it's a 4-credit class. Sometimes it's a co-curricular activity. And they practice. They practice leadership. The curriculum is attributes of effective leaders, leadership styles, followership styles, attributes of effective teams, problem solving, ethical decision making, navigating stress. Nice. So it's maybe like 90 concepts. Mm-hmm. And they practice. And then they come together in April. It's online. And we also have some live competitions as well, but primarily it's online. And imagine your team in a Zoom room with 2 judges with a rubric that aligns with the curriculum, and you're given a task, and on the fly, you and your team have to navigate this task. And there's 200 points for each activity, 6 activities total. Each student leads 1 round. And there's 100 points for process and 100 points for the results. So process is really, really important. The rubric is a leader and team effectiveness rubric. Mm. It's not just all about the leader. It's how did this team function with one another? So again, trying to move off of that kind of leader-centric as the catalyst. No, it's how did they team? And how do they work with one another to co-create, to Ron Riggio's quote, to co-create the win, right? Mm-hmm. And It's been so much fun. It has really, really been one of the most challenging things I've undertaken as a professional. And it's an organization that has so many lessons for me that I love it and I hate it because it keeps kicking my butt.
Yeah, I can totally see that. Yeah. I love that. First of all, I love that you're measuring process and product, right? Because that really kind of, in a way, like it mirrors this leadership, followership, you know, spirit that the whole thing is important, right? Not just what you get at the end. And that's so true of our work too, right? I think like it matters like how you show up and experience your work every day. Like it's not only, you know, that you get the product out or that you get a paycheck. It's like your day-to-day experience. And I also love that you're pioneering here a system of measure, right? That takes into account the whole team and what everybody does on the team, right? Not just the person who's the leader, like for 5 minutes or for 5 hours or whatever it is. Because we really need that. We need those new systems of measure in order to see, right, what we're doing and to not only evaluate, but to kind of track ourselves.
Yeah. Well, and it's been so much fun because it's, you know, what does leadership practice look like? How do you coach leadership? How do you judge leadership? I mean, all of those are these really interesting, fascinating questions that we're learning. And it's by no means a finished product. It's by no means shiny and well oiled. It's a little bit clunky. We're learning. And we have a community of leadership scholars and educators who are really interested in figuring this out. And creating that space where behaviorally, again, the students are behaving. We know we've moved the ball. When Jimmy, who as a follower used to just take over and kind of bulldoze his way through an exercise, now has the wherewithal to say, you know what? I stayed quiet and I didn't take over. We say, good job, Jimmy.
Yeah.
You know? And sometimes maybe it's that individual who's more introverted on the team, who in the beginning of the season wouldn't speak up and say, hey, stop, everybody, stop. We're jumping into the activity and not outlining the problem here. Mm-hmm. Maybe they wouldn't say that. Maybe now they are. They're asserting themselves as a follower a little bit more aggressively. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but just they're asserting themselves and intervening skillfully in a way they may not have at the beginning of the semester. So again, that word intentionality, am I showing up differently when I'm in this follower role, in this teaming role? Because again, there's leading, following, and then this teaming. There's this space where the roles can merge and we're just cohesively moving forward. Does that make sense when I say that?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think the language I would use is a little different, but I feel like in a team, there's sort of like a default follower setting in the best teams. If everyone has the followership skill set, then you're all following the purpose of the team, right? And by default. So if you're not the leader for the moment, then you're already in that kind of supportive, attentive, like intentional mode. And that's what I would call like default following in a positive sense, right? And then from that position, you can always step into a leadership role or say, hey, wait a second, or like shift your style into more assertive or, you know, more quiet or more introspective or more provocative, whatever it needs to be. But that sort of at a base level, you're not checked out, you're in.
Yes. You're in and you're serving the team in the best possible way. So for instance, I was in a meeting today and in the meeting, I was not leading it, nor was I the primary authority figure in the room. But there were a couple times where I more assertively stated an opinion than maybe I needed to, but I needed it to be elevated a little bit more as this is a thing. And please pay close attention to this thing. Now, in the moment, it was an intentional move on my part. It wasn't just, you know, I'm emotionally triggered and kind of frustrated. It is something that is frustrating. But I wasn't frustrated in the moment or working from a default. It was, I'm going to put a little bit of a bold and an underline and an exclamation point on this statement right here. And then I kind of stepped back into, you know, my normal role. And in that meeting, it was follow and participate and be active. Right.
Yeah, that's a great example. And I find that without the followership skill set or without the awareness that you're talking about of, you know, this reciprocation, it's very tempting for a lot of folks in industry or in, you know, in a classroom setting to just sort of be a little checked out, you know, unless they're a leader. They're like, oh, well, either I'm the leader or I'm nothing. Right. Yes. And this sort of answers, you know, it sort of is like an antidote to that, right? That like black and white-ness. It's like, no, there's sort of an umbrella in-ness that we're all in. And then from there we can, you know, amplify or soften or whatever we need to do. Before we finish, Scott, I want to just ask if there's anything that surprised you or that kind of you've, you know, discovered from your students, like over, you know, in recent years, once they kind of get this idea of two sidesness, right? Of leader followerness.
Something I underscore often with both. Mm-hmm. I think at times it can be easy for leaders to default into they don't get it. Oh, my team isn't where they need to be. They don't get it. And I think at times it can be easy for followers, quote unquote, to say, she doesn't get it. He doesn't get it. And they're both part of a dysfunctional system. Mm-hmm. Right. The leader is not what the leader is putting out is not yielding results that he or she they would hope for. And oftentimes followers in their influence attempts may not be skilled and intentional about their influence attempts and may not be they may not be well timed. They may not be well thought through. You know, you've sat in the meetings when someone says, well, I don't know if this is a good idea, but maybe we could think about, I don't know, blah. And it's just this not well thought through intervention, right?
Yeah.
It's right, not going right. to, so at times, I mean, again, when we're in this space where we're not getting the results we want, I think we all have to look within first. Like, I'm not getting the results from the team that I would hope to get. We don't have the engagement. We don't have the enthusiasm. What do I, it at least has to go through the filter of what do I need to own in that? Mm-hmm. And then again, when followers are in this position where we have an authority figure that may not be who we want them to be or behaving how we want them to be, well, what do we need to own in this dysfunctional situation? And oftentimes, especially in organizational life where there's a lot of fear, the followers will either not intervene and just put up with it and not say anything and kind of be complicit in the dysfunction, or they will not speak up in the meeting and then the decision's made and everyone commiserates afterwards. And again, they're kind of part of the dysfunctional situation. And so it's easy for them, for either side to blame and other, the other group. And I think for me, building that awareness of, okay, we're not where we want to be. What do I need to own in that? Mm-hmm. And at least having it go through that filter, I think it's important.
Yeah, I think it's really a powerful question because so many, you know, maybe like 90% of these situations, there's no formulaic answer, right? You can't just be like, oh, just use super fix it leadership and you'll get it. You know, there's no like easy solution because we're humans and we're all coming from like many different perspectives on our own minds. But getting into that habit of asking the question, what do I need to own in this? It's actually a very skillful way of keeping yourself in the relationship.
Yes.
In other words, I think, quote, they don't get it or he doesn't get it is often what checking out looks like from either leadership or followership.
Yes.
I want to add here also that asking, what do I need to own in this, is not an easy thing, right? It makes you really vulnerable and it can be scary, but it is a way to have a measure of influence from either role.
Yes. All we've been doing, whether it's in CLC or in some of my work in organizational life, just trying to build a little bit of awareness that it's not just the leader. Mm-hmm. You know, it's simply kind of building awareness that it's leaders, followers, context, that it's more than great man, great woman, and helping to build that awareness. I mean, it's almost as that in the dice game. That's all I got.
Yeah. You know, I think that dice game, there's a lot there, you know, that has some
it's
legs.
It's so much fun.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. And that's again, John Ross from IU. He was not using it in the way I have adapted it, mm-hmm. but Sharna, that activity never fails and people remember it and people it's imprinted. It's a highlight for folks.
Well, listeners, you heard it here first, the dice game on the Lead and Follow podcast. Also, be sure to check out Scott's podcast, Phronesis, and his fantastic interviews with Barbara Kellerman, Ron Riggio, and many others. Scott, anything else you'd like to share that I've forgotten to ask about?
No, you know, the only other thing I'll mention is that you and Ira wrote a foreword to a textbook, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I had the honor to co-author with Ira Chaliff the foreword for a textbook that you yourself, Scott, are a co-author on. The textbook is Discovering Leadership, Designing Your Success, the second edition, which has substantial new content. And I'll note for listeners who may be fans of design thinking, you may want to check out this textbook because it does leverage that perspective, among others. The book is coming out soon, Scott, isn't it?
Yes, it's coming out. It's coming out January and February 2023. Tony Middlebrooks is the lead author. And we wanted you and Ira to write that forward because, you know, even in that textbook, which we wanted to highlight and elevate the point of this is lopsided. We're presenting you this, but it's not the whole conversation. And we want you to at least understand that point. And so in this version, which is the second edition of the textbook, we're elevating that conversation more on followership.
Fabulous. Discovering Leadership, Designing Your Success. Check it out. Scott, thank you so much for the conversation, for sharing your stories and your insights, and for all the work you're doing to integrate leadership and followership in your own work. I look forward to our next conversation.
I love it. Thanks for having me, Sharna. Take care.
You have been listening to the Lead and Follow podcast. Special thanks to Glover Gill for composing our music. And thank you to all of our subscribers. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider supporting the show with a paid subscription. And if your team or organization is interested in followership training, please reach out anytime. I'd love to help.